From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Sinclair Broadcast Group is the nation's largest owner of local TV stations, and it wants to get even bigger. A proposed merger would allow Sinclair to bring its conservative news programming to 70% of U.S. households. The FCC, which has long protected local stations, is so far giving Sinclair a green light in the name of deregulation. This hour on Point, Sinclair's takeover of local TV across America. You can join us on air or online. What does it mean when a single broadcast company controls a majority of local stations in the country? Does it matter that its programming has a conservative slant? Where should the FCC come down on media consolidation? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. But first, President Trump's comments yesterday in New York. Speaking at Trump Tower yesterday, the president once again blamed both sides in response to the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, over the weekend.
What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right? Do they have any semblance of guilt?
He went on, going head-to-head with reporters who asked whether he was putting hate groups on the same level as the counter-protesters.
I've condemned neo-Nazis. I've condemned many different groups, but not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me. Not all of those people were white supremacists by any stretch.
And joining me now from New York is Jeff Mason. He's the White House correspondent for Reuters. Jeff, welcome back to On Point.
Good to be with you, Tom.
So, Jeff, you were there yesterday in the room with the president when he delivered those remarks. Is that right?
I was.
Yeah. Yes. Describe the scene.
Well, for starters, we were in the lobby of Trump Tower, which is the area where President Trump, as a president-elect, addressed reporters several times, and where we went often during the transition period up until his inauguration in January. So it's a familiar space for a back and forth with him, although this was the first time that he had been there since January. And it was supposed to be an event about infrastructure. He came down and was flanked by Gary Cohn, his economic advisor, the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, and the Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao. And he talked first a little bit about infrastructure and then opened it up to questions. And of course, the press corps wanted to speak to him about the fallout from his remarks on Saturday and then the sort of cleanup effort that he did at the White House on Monday. And it gave him a chance to really vent about his frustration, about the coverage, about what he had said on Saturday, and show that he wanted to reiterate that he had been right all along.
And, Jeff, in one of your dispatches, you described the scene there, the conversation, as surreal.
It was surreal, Tom. I mean, it really was. We weren't surprised, or I should say I wasn't surprised, that he would take some questions, because he did take a few questions, several really, last week during his time in Bedminster. So in that back and forth is something that we obviously welcome as part of the press corps. But I wasn't expecting him to go back to what he had said on Saturday, given the fact that on Monday, while he was at the White House, they made a deliberate effort to recalibrate by saying, or by having him say and come out in the diplomatic room to be specifically explicit in criticizing the KKK and neo-Nazis and white supremacists. So he walked all of that back, and then in this sort of angry and passionate voice, really stood up for the people who had been rallying in Charlottesville.
Now, I saw one picture where he appeared to be pulling out a paper from his pocket, and I understand it was a quote, the quote from his Saturday press conference. That would suggest he came prepared.
He was prepared
to take this on.
For sure. He was prepared, and that's kind of interesting as well, since we had been told ahead of time that he wasn't going to take questions. But he clearly knew that he wanted to speak about it. And yes, he took that piece of paper out and read from his original statement on Saturday, and had clearly been ruminating about the coverage of that and the fact that he had received so much criticism for it, and was not happy that he had, or appeared not to be happy, that he had had to kind of recalibrate on Monday.
Yeah. So you say Gary Cohn and Steve Mnuchin and General Kelly, his chief of staff, were all there prepared to talk about infrastructure and describe the reaction. I think we've all seen the pictures of them. It appears that they were quite uncomfortable with the way things were developing there.
Yeah. General Kelly was standing off to the side. I actually didn't see him, although I did see the picture of him. But standing with President Trump were Cohn and the others that we just mentioned. And Cohn in particular looked very uncomfortable. He was kind of fidgeting back and forth as the president spoke. Secretary Chao tried to maintain a smile on her face while she sort of gazed at the president. But it was clearly awkward for them. And they ended up coming back later into the lobby, Secretary Chao and Gary in particular, to take some questions about infrastructure. And of course, you know, reporters all asked them about what had just happened, and they tried to deflect those, and Secretary Chao had sort of a clever answer when she was asked about President Trump's criticism of her husband, Senator Mitch McConnell. But obviously everybody wanted to just get their own reaction to the kind of spectacle that had just taken place.
Finally, Jeff, any update from today in terms of, continuing reaction to those comments yesterday?
Well, at this point, I think the White House is just kind of in battle mode. I wrote a story last night that said they were bracing for further fallout, and one of the officials I spoke to said that the best way to go forward was just to not say anything more, and I think he was meaning specifically there President Trump, and hoping that he wasn't going to tweet or really engage anymore in this subject, because doing so only got them into further hot water.
Yeah. Okay. Jeff Mason is White House correspondent for Reuters. He's also the current president of the White House Correspondents Association.
I just gave that gig up.
Oh, you did?
Just a couple weeks ago, yeah.
Well, maybe it was a good time to give it up, given what's going on.
It was quite a year, I'll tell you that.
I'll guess. All right. Thanks so much, Jeff, for joining us with that update.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
And now, Sinclair Broadcasting and its takeover of local television. Joining me from New York is Sydney Ember. She's a business reporter for the New York Times covering the media. Her most recent piece is How a Conservative TV Giant is Ridding Itself of Regulation. In fact, you can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Sydney, welcome to On Point.
Good to be here, Tom.
So, Sydney, first let's talk about Sinclair, the Sinclair Broadcast Group. Tell us a little bit about it, a profile of it, how it got started, and what's its mission in the news world?
So Sinclair was started in 1971 by a man named Julian Sinclair Smith. He was an electrical engineer. And soon, you know, he had four sons and they started, you know, taking over the company. And basically beginning in 1991, they pursued sort of an aggressive expansion strategy. You know, this benefited them. The bigger they are, the more leverage they have in negotiations. But they didn't really, they weren't owning tons of local stations until, you know, maybe a decade ago, they started, you know, really, really pursuing an even more aggressive strategy. And now they own, before this big merger that we're going to talk about, they own 100 and, or own or operate 173 local stations across the country. And one of the things they've become known for is sort of pushing this conservative content. It's usually centrally produced, and they have commentary from conservative pundits, and they also sometimes push news segments themselves.
Actually, let's take a listen to one of those segments that Sinclair requires its stations to run, its affiliates to run. This is a segment that aired in March in which Scott Livingston, the company's vice president for news, accused the national news media of publishing fake news.
I'm sure you know about the troubling trend of irresponsible and one-sided news stories plaguing our country. The sharing of bias and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, national media outlets are publishing these fake news stories without fact-checking. Unfortunately, some members of the national media are using their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control exactly what people think. This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Now, Sydney, that, of course, is very much a conservative viewpoint, but I understand that Sinclair insists that it stands for a diversity of perspectives. Does it air also commentaries from perhaps a more moderate or even liberal perspective?
Not as far as I know. What Sinclair says is there's plenty of, you know, left-leaning content on the air, and the media tends to skew left, and they're providing the perspective to basically the rest of America that wants this more conservative perspective and doesn't want just the left perspective. So they sort of assume that if you want the left-leaning perspective, you can watch or read most of the other media, and they will give you the more down the middle or slightly conservative view.
And what happens when it insists that local stations require run these commentaries? Has there been much pushback?
There has been some pushback. I wrote in May about a station in Seattle, and, you know, there are small acts of rebellion. They'll run these must-runs at times that people may not really be watching television, you know, early in the morning, very late at night. But generally, I think there's just a sense of frustration. You know, the more content that is pushed to them, a number of people have told me they feel that the less actual local news they can air.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
This is On Point. I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the conservative Sinclair Broadcast Group, the TV giant that wants to expand its reach to 70% of the country via local stations. You can join the conversation. What does it mean if one company owns so many TV stations in towns across America? Have you seen any of the right-wing content that Sinclair requires its stations to run? And we're already getting a number of comments. Here's one from our website. This is Debbie. She says, most, if not all, of Hollywood is liberal. CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN, MSNBC, all liberal. Most of the printed newspapers are liberal. NPR, PBS, liberal. Silicon Valley, giants, Apple, Google are all liberal. We need diversity in the media. Is there some unwritten rule that all media is supposed to be liberal? A different viewpoint from a listener who calls herself Hello Kitty. It means that one entity, she's got a different viewpoint, it means that one entity is controlling the narrative that everyone hears, and that's bad, bad, bad. It's what the FCC is supposed to be preventing, not encouraging. It's most certainly not capitalism, and it's anti-democracy. My guest this hour is Sydney Ember, business reporter for The New York Times, covering the media. And Sydney, on that last point, as Kitty says, it's what the FCC is supposed to be preventing, not encouraging. What's the sort of the history of the FCC dealing with this issue of media consolidation? And how has the FCC under this administration responded to Sinclair's moves?
Well, so the FCC doesn't want there to be, you know, one or two big broadcast companies that control all of the local stations. So what they've done is they, for a while, had a cap on the number of local stations that broadcast companies could own. However, under the new Trump administration, there's a new FCC chairman, and he's become known as a pro-business, He definitely advocates for the business side of things, and he has taken up a number of moves very quickly that largely benefit Sinclair, including easing a cap on how many stations a broadcaster can own. And this, you know, has gotten a lot of pushback from consumer advocacy groups and also more of the left-leaning media companies that don't want Sinclair's content pushed to so many local stations. Sinclair has also seized on this. You know, pretty quickly they announced this big deal, a nearly $4 billion deal to buy Tribune Media, which is another large broadcast company. So that's really what's worrying people a lot, is they're going to get even bigger.
And that hasn't been approved yet by the FCC, but you're expecting it will be?
Yes, it's widely expected that it will be approved.
And Sydney, you've written that the current FCC chairman actually shares the political ideology of Sinclair. And of course, as we've said, that Sinclair ideology is distinctly conservative. Let's consider another one of these segments that Sinclair requires its stations to run. This one from last week, Mark Hyman, the former Sinclair executive who now has a must-run commentary section for affiliates, commented on the trend in many cities to take down Confederate statues and monuments.
It's become fashionable to remove Civil War statues that are reminders of our nation's past. For example, statues were torn down in New Orleans, St. Louis, Orlando, and Frederick, Maryland. Artifacts from our past face similar threats in Annapolis, Maryland, and Charlottesville, Virginia. Removal of historical statues is short-sighted. Clearly, there have been ugly chapters in American history. But ripping down statues and similar imagery doesn't alter that history. Instead, they should serve as important reminders of our past to help guide our behavior going forward.
And that was Mark Hyman, the former Sinclair executive who prepares commentaries that affiliate stations, Sinclair affiliates, have to run. We should note that since that commentary aired before these recent events in Charlottesville, Virginia, where there was a alt-right rally in reaction to a city council vote to remove the statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Now, joining us next from Northport, Maine, is Craig Aaron. He's president and CEO of Free Press, a consumer watchdog group that supports press freedom and works to curb media consolidation. Free Press is against FCC deregulation. Craig, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So your thoughts, Craig, on what is at stake as the FCC gives green lights to Sinclair and perhaps other organizations that want to consolidate?
Well, I think what you're talking about is just too much media power in too few hands. The idea that we would have one company in Sinclair, which is a company that has used the public airwaves to push a very specific partisan agenda, but that one company could control more than 230 stations across the country, that they could reach north of 70% of the national audience, when the law in the book says one company is only supposed to be able to reach 39% of the country. So what you have is a situation where the Trump FCC, the Trump administration, is gaming the rules, changing the rules to allow this kind of massive consolidation, where when Sinclair goes and talks to its investors, it talks about the incredible reach and the advertising markets it's going to reach. But when it goes to talk to the Federal Communications Commission or the Congress, it pretends it's much smaller. And I think this is very dangerous to have rules being made that really benefit one company, a company that has gone out of its way to boost the administration and the president, hired numerous former spokespeople from the Trump administration, and really push the agenda everywhere they go, to now be absolutely the biggest broadcaster in the country. And it really has that appearance of a quid pro quo, where we gave you all this favorable coverage, and now we're coming to collect our policy favors.
Now, Craig, you mentioned that current law limits the amount of reach that a broadcast organization can have, and yet you say Sinclair, and I guess with the FCC's approval, is bending that rule. How are they doing that? How are they getting around this rule?
So this is—it gets a little bit obscure, but there was a long-time rule in the book called the UHF discount, and that essentially meant that if you owned a television channel that was higher than Channel 13, it only counted for half as much toward the national cap. And 20 or 30 years ago, this might have made sense. A UHF channel doesn't reach as far as channels 1 through 13, but we now live in a digital world. where most viewers get their news through cable television, where we have digital broadcasting, where UHF signals are actually more valuable than VHF signals. So the Obama administration got rid of the discount. They said, no, it doesn't make any sense anymore. It's obsolete. As one of its first acts, the Trump administration and FCC Chairman Ajit Pai came in and said, no, we're going to restore this discount so that if you're a company like Sinclair, instead of saying you reach nearly three-quarters of the country, when you enter this zone around the FCC, well, now it's only 44%. And they've lined up. So that was one of the first acts they did, was actually change the rules, game the rules, to benefit a company like Sinclair that had been pushing for these changes and had a long history of trying to evade these limits through shell companies and other things, now seeing these rules being erased or taken off the books. And there's a lot of talk out of the FCC that they are coming to remove other limits. For example, the limit on how many individual stations one company can own in a market. And again, if you are hearing the conversation in Washington, it sounds totally different than the conversation on Wall Street. When Sinclair talks to their investors, they talk about their massive reach. They talk about their vision of having only one or two companies competing in a given market to bring local news. So that there may be four or six channels, but they envision, you know, only one or two voices in a given market.
We should point out that we did ask Sinclair to take part in this program. They didn't respond. We asked them multiple times. They declined to respond. As far as the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, they also declined to join this discussion, saying they could not discuss transactions that are pending before the commission. But Sidney Ember, in one of your stories, you did talk to an FCC spokesperson, and correct me if I'm mistaken, but I think you quoted the spokesperson as saying that this is not just about Sinclair. In fact, I think she said that several news organizations, several broadcast organizations support the kind of deregulatory moves that the FCC is taking. Is that right?
That's correct. You know, there are broadcast companies that obviously want to get bigger and do think that that UHF discount is outdated. And, you know, they want to, you know, they think that they can benefit and get more advertisers and then, you know, ultimately make more money, essentially. However, this, you know, isn't necessarily good for viewers for a number of reasons we've discussed.
Okay. Let's go to the phones now. First, we have John, who's on the line from Williamsburg, New York. John, welcome to On Point.
Hi. Well, it's Williamsville, but thank you.
Williamsville, right. Sorry.
Yes, not a problem at all. I'm going to preface all my comments by saying I am a conservative, a dyed-in-the-wool conservative. However, hey, look at me. I am listening to On Point on National Public Radio. I have a free will to do that. Why is it that people on the left, and Mr. Free America, you are far from free, why is it that it's always the left that tries to curb something that is successful? The left for years has been trying to get their own Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck. They cannot do it. It is not because some guy named, or from Sinclair Communications owns the airwaves. It's because people have an on-off switch. They have a dial that they can set, they can reset, they can do whatever they want to do. And you people are always in the process of, hey, let's shut him up, let's shut him up. Let me tell you something. If two companies own one market, Mr. Man from Maine, I forgot your name, I'm sorry, that should theoretically create a void that should be filled by some liberal, okay? Now, if they cannot fill that void, then it's not worth it. These are money-making propositions. They are in business to make money. They are not here to, they will do run their PSAs and stuff like that, but they're not there to strictly be in the, they're doing PSAs. They are there to make money and to get listeners.
Right. Okay, John.
It is the purest form of entertainment because people choose to do it.
People choose to do it. And let's go to the man from Maine so he can respond to what John has to say. That's Craig Aaron. He's president and CEO of Free Press. Craig, you heard John's point. This is a free marketplace.
It is, but we're talking about the public airwaves. This is a national resource. There are limited number of spots, limited number of television stations, limited number of radio stations out there. And the reason these rules exist is to encourage a diversity of viewpoints, encourage a variety of local competing newsrooms who might have different slants, different reporters, different angles. And what you lose when you allow one company to control so much nationwide and so much in a given market is you lose those choices and diversity. Sinclair is pushing one viewpoint, that's fine. But when that one viewpoint is being broadcast on three or four channels and there is no alternative, then that's where we have a problem. And I think when you combine it with the sort of, you know, crony capitalism on display, when that viewpoint happens to boost the party that is currently in power, and that is being traded for policy favors for changing the way this marketplace works, that's why we have a problem. And that's why a lot of conservative voices mm-hmm. have also risen up and are challenging, formally challenging, as is my group Free Press, this merger, because they recognize what happens when you game the system, when you get rid of that even playing field, and you allow a company like Sinclair to have so much media power that they start sucking up all the advertising dollars, all the cable company fees, and they can start to pour that into other businesses that might undermine a conservative website or news organization that's trying to get right. a toehold, but can't hope to compete with a company as big as Sinclair. That's why these rules were created. They've existed for a long time. Companies like Sinclair have been trying to undermine them. But I think there is actually the real risk to our democracy is only having okay. one viewpoint, not having that variety of choices.
Well, let's have another viewpoint now, another voice in the conversation. Derek Donovan is member of the editorial board at the Kansas City Star, and he joins us from Kansas City. He recently wrote an editorial headlined, "Don't Be Afraid of Conservative Local TV News." And you can link to that article at our website, onpointradio.org. Derek, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
So you've been following this discussion that we've had. You've heard already different points in this hour. What's your take on this issue of Sinclair Broadcast taking over local TV news and the FCC letting them get away with it?
Well, I do think that the machinations of the FCC in trying to change what many people see as a level playing field is something that we need to be very concerned about, obviously. That being said, I do think overall that a lot of the, as I wrote, I think, in the editorial, the hand-wringing and tooth-gnashing over this is really overstating the influence that Sinclair could possibly have. And the idea that conservative viewpoints could crowd out any other viewpoints in today's media landscape is, to me, pretty silly. I think that conservative media certainly has entrenched itself over the past 25 years post-Limbaugh to become actually rather monolithic itself. The diversity of viewpoints among that niche alternative conservative media world is actually extremely small. You know, it's very much lockstep. It's not what I would consider tremendously thinking or nuanced. And, you know, this is another manifestation of itself at the local TV level. But it's not as though Sinclair is going to actually control a majority of television stations across the country if this goes through. They're going to control a majority of Fox stations. But there's still plenty of other viewpoints out there. And I kind of think that's the strength of America, is that we are allowed to have a lot of viewpoints and be able to judge for ourselves what we like and what we don't.
So, Derek, there is one issue of the sort of the conservative slant of Sinclair. But another issue is whether viewers will hear local voices delivering their news. I mean, you know, we're going to talk about a poll later this hour that shows that people trust local news presenters more than they trust national news presenters. Do you see any risk in having news presented by someone other than your local anchor?
Absolutely, I do. And I think that this is an issue that in the newspaper industry we've been wrestling with considerably over the past 15 years or so, because we understand that our expertise is in our local communities. And I don't think, if you're talking about this being a business decision, that that's going to end up being a good business decision for Sinclair to try to offshore some of that, because people look to their local TV stations for the same reason they look to their local newspapers and websites, is because those are the people who are going to City Hall, those are the people who are covering the local weather, whatever it is that people
exactly.
are interested in.
Exactly. Derek Donovan is an editorial board member of the Kansas City Star. Derek, thanks for joining us today.
It was a pleasure to be here.
This is On Point. I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook. And we're talking about the conservative TV giant Sinclair Broadcast Group, the biggest owner of TV stations in the country and growing. You can join our conversation. What's the line for you when it comes to media consolidation? And one of the things that we're talking about is how Sinclair Broadcast Group requires its local stations to run news programming that is written and prepared by Sinclair itself. And we have an example of how that sounds. This is thanks to John Oliver's Last Week Tonight. He talked about how several Sinclair stations introduce the same story about the FBI and Michael Flynn.
Did the FBI have a personal vendetta in pursuing the Russia investigation of President Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn?
Did the FBI have a personal vendetta in pursuing the Russia investigation of President Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn?
Did the FBI have a personal vendetta
in pursuing the Russia investigation of
President Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn?
Did the FBI have a personal vendetta in pursuing the investigation?
It could very well be true.
And that gives you an idea of how scripted many of the local news programming on Sinclair stations is as a result of directives from Sinclair itself. And joining us now is Hadass Gold. She covers media and politics for Politico. Hadass, welcome back to On Point.
Great to be with you, Tom.
And first, Hadass, interesting poll that Politico and your partner Morning Consult have put out, I think just today, right, about how local news is seen by viewers around the country. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So, yeah, this poll was just published this morning, and the survey looked at trust of local news versus national news. And this is important in illustrating why we are making such a big fuss over local television coverage. People who answered the survey said that 41% say they trust local news to tell them the truth versus 27% who trust the national news and 32% who don't have an opinion. Democrats have more faith in national news, saying 39 to 36% they trust it more than local news, but Republicans, by 45 to 21% margin, trust local news more than national news. Overall, national news outlets are viewed as more liberal. A combined 55% said the national news is very or somewhat liberal. And compare that with local news, only 40% say it's liberal, though only 14% say it's very liberal, with 26% saying they consider local news very or somewhat conservative. What's also important to all of this is how much local news affects people who vote in local elections. I know that the Pew Group has done a lot of work on this, and it shows that if you are someone who votes in local elections, you're very likely someone who pays very close attention to local news. And as we all know, your local elections have a much bigger impact on your day-to-day life than any national election might.
So what implications do you draw from this, Hadass, in terms of these poll findings about how viewers are likely to respond if Sinclair takes over more and more TV stations around the country and supplies the content that those viewers are going to hear or see on those stations?
Well, as we see from this poll, people trust local news more than they might trust national news because they are a lot of times I think people understand now and approach national news with somewhat of an understanding that they might be coming from a certain side. They think Fox News, they think right-wing conservative, they see MSNBC, they might think left-wing liberal. When it comes to your local station, though, a lot of people don't think that. When they think local news, they think news about their schools, they think news about the roads, they think traffic and weather. And what's happening with Sinclair that's alarming some people is that these national stories are being inserted into them. Now, local news has always covered national news, but as we saw from the John Oliver clip, is that these scripts will be inserted in, and it kind of becomes a universal thing that's covered without having necessarily a national news, like a cable news network like Fox News, but you're still getting that national reach because of how many stations Sinclair owns.
Let's hear now from Pat, who's on the line from Hendersonville, North Carolina. Pat's got some thoughts on this issue. Pat, thanks for joining On Point.
Thanks, Tom. I just wanted to point out our local station here in Hendersonville is WLOS-TV, Channel 13, and it is owned by Sinclair Corporation. The thing that I noticed in this last election after Ben Carson had dropped out of the race was that when they needed an interview, early in the morning, and this is between 6 and 7, they only brought on Ben Carson to trump the accolades for Donald Trump. They brought on no liberals, just Ben Carson. And it became apparent to me that they were trying to manipulate the local populace, and of course we went 100% almost for Trump. But the point I'm trying to make is it's a very subtle and dangerous bunch that runs Sinclair Corporation.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Pat. We also have a call from Mark in Syracuse, New York, who has his own story about what Sinclair has done to local news in his area. Mark, thanks for joining us on Point.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. Our congressman, Representative John Katko, had been asked to hold a public town hall, and he had repeatedly refused, and eventually he did a television town hall in which the people allowed in the room were screened, the questions were pre-screened, and it appeared on a Sinclair station, and that, you know, the Sinclair Broadcasting Group also gives money to John Katko's campaign. So it had the appearance of being a public event, but it was highly staged.
Let's go to Sydney Ember, who's been covering this story for the New York Times. Sydney, what have you understood from Sinclair as far as, you know, we've heard several examples here of how it appears to slant its coverage or give favoritism to particular candidates, some of whom it may have supported financially or may have some kind of arrangement with. To what extent is that actually the case?
Well, Sinclair actually, it's led by a man named David Smith, and he has actually supported both Democrats and Republicans. So, you know, more and more they are pushing this conservative agenda, but a lot of that is, you know, it's actual commentary, and they would say it's analogous to, you know, opinions columns in newspapers. So they would say that the conservative commentary that they have is opinion, and that their news is straight down the middle.
And Hadass Gold, what do you see happening next here? I mean, we still, the FCC still has to rule on whether Sinclair can purchase this right. Tribune broadcast group. So what's at stake going forward, do you see?
Well, as far as we all know, is that this is going to get approved. There might be some sort of station switchings in certain markets based off some other rules, but ultimately, we all believe that this will happen. And really, Sinclair's reach is going to get broader. There's already been reports that they are interested in hiring some big names, such as maybe Bill O'Reilly or something like that. And clearly they have a plan, though. They claim they're not planning to have some sort of Fox News competitor. But clearly their influence is growing, as we can see from all the attention that the likes of myself and Sydney are placing on them, that the media attention on them is growing. But I'd like to tell people that this doesn't mean that your local news anchor is going to turn into the next Bill O'Reilly. These local stations still get independence over how they cover. But I have heard concerns from people who work at these Sinclair stations that they're going to be told to not pay as much attention to certain stories, even at the local level, that resources aren't going to be given to them to cover certain stories, that their news directors might be switched out, that certain anchors might be switched out because from the corporate level. But really, it's these must-runs that I think bother some Sinclair employees the most, because not only do they might they not agree with the point of view that is coming from, but also they are very proud of being a local station where everything is produced locally and from their own people who live in their communities, not something that comes from a corporate overlord across the country.
Now, Hadass, a lot of the stations that Sinclair has bought have been small town stations, but you're there in Washington. And in Washington, Sinclair took over a very big station, the ABC affiliate, WJLA. Since you're there in Washington, have you spoken to WJLA employees, and do you have any sense of how they have responded to this Sinclair takeover?
Well, beyond also the editorial line that comes down from Sinclair, the company is also known to be known for its cost cutting measures when it takes over a company. Mm. So that's, I mean, honestly, when you're talking to employees at a company, what they see is kind of on the ground, and what they've told me is they remove people, the staff changes a lot, things get constricted. On the one hand, they have invested a lot of money into a new studio in WJLA. This they're kind of considering WJLA one of their headquarters from which to produce a lot of this national stuff. Boris Epstein, who's one of the former Trump administration officials who works at Sinclair, his offices are at the WJLA studios, actually in the same building as Politico's, ironically. But what they see is definitely a change in obviously just the management style and how things are run, but also in these must-run packages, which they weren't getting before.
Let's go now to Craig Aaron, the president and CEO of Free Press, who's on the line from Maine. And Craig, you have been working to challenge this media consolidation trend with the FCC. What's on your agenda? What are you trying to do right now with respect to the FCC's decision-making process? How are you trying to impact that?
Well, along with seven other different groups and organizations, we filed a formal challenge to this merger and the transfer of licenses at the FCC. So that's a legal challenge that they'll have to consider. Sinclair will be responding to that in the next couple of weeks. We've also filed a lawsuit in federal court with our partners at Georgetown Law School challenging the FCC's decision to change this rule, as we would argue, to benefit Sinclair and a handful of these companies. So I think that that's on the legal side where we're pushing, and we are really urging people, if they're concerned about this, to contact the Federal Communications Commission. They're supposed to work for you. If you don't think your local station should be taken over, you should let them know, and you should let your members of Congress know. We heard a lot of concern from folks on the phone about what was being put into their newscast and without disclosure, and I think if people call, talk about their personal stories, their local experiences, that really matters in a process like this, and as it makes its way through the legal system as well.
Let's go now to Rob, who's on the line from Dayton, Ohio. Rob, you're on Point. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thanks for having me. My question is, how is Sinclair different from the national media collaborating with, say, talking points provided by the Democratic Party, or, say, different from the Russians that use media bots that try to reach social media people? They're all trying to vie for space in the media area, and it's all free speech. You just don't know whose opinion that they're trying to push. And it'd be nice if everyone would disclose what their point of view is, but that doesn't seem to happen with the national media when they all ask the same questions.
Hadas, why don't you respond to that? I mean, part of, I think, what Rob is suggesting here is that we can't just look at this story with Sinclair in isolation from what's happening in the broader media landscape, where we see more partisan programming on all sides. We also see media consolidation far and beyond what Sinclair is trying to do.
Right, and this caller does have a point in that just look in this past week, we had reports that the head of Fox News, Rupert Murdoch, is having dinner with the president and advising him on who to hire and fire amongst his staff. Now, that's pretty unusual. And I think what we're realizing is that some people still have this sort of idyllic view of the media from the days of perhaps the Walter Cronkites, where all of the media was supposed to be incredibly objective, although one could argue that even Walter Cronkite was always incredibly objective, and that we could be sure that they would be freed from bias and influence. However, that's obviously not the case, and really this is similar to the issue with fake news, is that the readers and the listeners and the viewers need to be a little bit more informed in what they're viewing and listening and reading, in the same way that they need to look critically at what their friends are sharing on Facebook, whether it's real. And when they're watching the news, they should think for a second, where is this coming from? Maybe I should diversify my viewing habits the same way that I need to eat all the vegetables. I should also be watching more news programs, listening to more news programs, and diversifying what I'm consuming so I can be more informed.
Sydney Ember, we heard earlier from, I think it was Craig Aaron, pointing out that it's not just liberal groups that are concerned about what Sinclair is doing and how the FCC is letting them get away with it. There are a number of conservative organizations as well who perhaps fear losing market share to Sinclair if it is able to consolidate its control on local TV stations. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so obviously this deal has gotten a lot of pushback, as you said, from left-leaning advocacy groups and other, you know, news media that don't want Sinclair's right-leaning commentary pushed out to local stations. But it has also garnered, pushback from conservative media outlets like Newsmax and One America News Network. Last week, I believe it was Newsmax filed a petition with the FCC urging them to deny the deal. And what they're really concerned about is this idea of, you know, a diversity of voices. They said in their filing that they wanted a free and diverse press and that it was a bedrock principle of American democracy and that this proposed merger, and these are their words, would cripple that. So that's kind of what the conservative media, some of them have said about this deal. They're not necessarily opposed to Sinclair's viewpoint or their political agenda, but they do want the competition and they do want this diversity of voices.
Well, we're going to see in the coming weeks and months how this plays out and whether that diversity of voices opposing these moves have any impact. Sydney Ember is business reporter for the New York Times. She covers the media. Sydney, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Also, we've heard from Craig Aaron. He's president and CEO of Free Press. Thanks to you, Craig.
Thanks, Tom.
And from Washington, Hadass Gold, who is the politics and media reporter for Politico. Thank you, Hadass, for calling in, for joining
us.
Thanks so much. And you can continue our conversation, and you can get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, white supremacists think they have a president who understands them. We dig deep into the supremacist movement in America today. I'm Tom Gelton, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.